Stay tuned for your 3CR podcast, featuring interviews from Bundles Fire Radio Show. 3CR is an independent community radio station in Fitzroy, Victoria, on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au. Yeah, good morning, everyone. I've got a special guest on the line, Kath Keeney from CoHealth. I think she's from the Hoddle Street, Collingwood service, and I'm just going to have a yarn to her about what's happening down there. I think it's been threatened with closure, so. Good morning, Kath. How are you going?
Morning, Uncle Robbie. I'm doing well. Thank you so much. The same can't be said, of course, for community health and, you know, an activist-based health system in Melbourne, an arm. So it's not threatened closure. It's they've got a date. So 19th of December, that's it. They're pulling the plug on general practice services, nursing services and counselling services at Collingwood. So that's the one on the corner of Hoddle and Johnson.
Yes.
At Fitzroy, so the one across the road from the flats, and at Kensington as well.
Oh,
so if you have a little think about where all of those places are, that there's not going to be doctor services anymore, they're all at the base of those flats.
Is there a conspiracy around that? Would this come out of the blue, this decision?
Yeah, completely out of the blue. They gave, you know, a couple of months' notice and they just completely pulled the plug. They haven't had any, they talk about, you know, consultation, but they haven't had any conversations with us doctors around it. They just, they've just said, no, it's not worth it. They're losing money. And so they're going to just close them up. So it's just, so it kind of makes you think, well, hang on, what's the point of a health service, right? If there's no doctors. And the one of the great things about those community health sites is it's not only doctors, but it's, you know, we've got nurses, we've got counselling services, we've got physio, podiatry, diabetes educators, and everything's in one spot. And one of the things which makes it really great is that we don't worry about time so much, like, so people get the time that they need. And that's the big trouble, because the way Medicare works is that you can't take time with patients. If you want to make any money using Medicare, you've got to see people really quickly. And so that's why we're not making any money.
Wow, geez, that's unbelievable. They've been so critical, these organisations in our community.
And, yeah, absolutely.
So and is it all about really making money, health services?
Well, no, that's what you'd think, right? But, you know, that's what they say. And the other thing about it, which is really important and gets lost with this, you know, management class talking about making money, is that those community health centres were based on activism. They were based on community control of community health, and that building was active. It wasn't given. Nothing's given in this world. Everything is fought for and gained, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not theirs. It's not management to turn around and say, oh, yeah, right, we're going to sell, you know, we're going to close that down and we're going to sell that site on Collingwood and make X number of million dollars. Well, it's not theirs to sell.
That's right. It's not whose asset, is it?
You know, it's the communities to sell. It's community health, and it was done by the community for the community. And it was, you know, there was a lot of lobbying and there's a lot of work that's gone into that history. That history is like, the long-term history, you know, goes back 100-something-odd years, but the history just of that building as providing healthcare for the people of Yarra is, you know, 50 years old. And they used to have a community board of management. And when I first started as a GP back in 2008, I did my very first placement ever there. And as doctors, we were expected to go to the management committee, you know, and sit there and be accountable to community people. And now it's just the managerial class deciding that we're not making enough money.
Oh, it's pretty, very sad. Do you think it's the closing of the attempted closing or demolition of the flats, do you think that's got anything to do with it? Sort of forcing people I suppose, out of the space and not having services to be.
I think it works. I'm not privy to what the management do, but I think that it works for the state government if they're trying to close those flats down to make it harder for people to live in a way that's sustainable and healthy there. I think it all fits nicely into their big plan. And I know that certainly CoHealth are looking at using other tenders and, you know, and trying to get different business from the state government. And so, you know, I can't say that they've plotted it together at all. I certainly wouldn't be able to say that out loud, but you'd certainly want to be thinking, well, hang on, how are you going to go for other tenders in the state government if you can't even keep GP services open? So if it's not, that doesn't seem tenable to me to be able to have that model unless there's something else going on. But absolutely couldn't say for sure.
Yeah, it's a bit of a worry. So is there a plan to fight back?
Oh, yeah, huge. So there's lots of stuff happening. Yarra Council's been great. They and Kensington people have done a really good job too. So there was a public meeting, say, 10 days or so ago where the community spirit was really strong, and this was where it was really about community control of community assets.
Yeah.
And so there's a rally on Saturday at 2 p.m. outside the federal minister, the new federal minister, Sarah Whitty. She replaced Adam Bandt at the last election, okay. So at her office there.
Is that in Johnson Street?
Yeah, that's it, exactly, 100%. And so there's a rally there at 2 p.m. And I think we really need to be using, you know, people power to pressure, because I think that it looks like, from what I'm hearing in the conversations that are happening, you know, a little bit behind the scenes, that they're kind of trying to blame us doctors a little bit by saying that we're not billing enough and that we're not making enough money, and we need to put some pressure on to say, hang on, it's not only about billing. This is a health service that is, you know, being a community controlled and community fought for, and we need to be focusing on community health, not on Medicare item numbers. So
I thought bulk billing took care of all those.
The trouble is that the bulk billing isn't enough. So a few years ago there was and both sides, both Conservative and Labor, did this. They kept the billing, the amount of money that the government gives doctors, which is called the Medicare rebate. They put a cap on it. So although you know, the cost of living was going up and up and up, that the money that was coming back to doctors wasn't going up. And that's why bulk billing stopped being more readily available. And basically, the way it works is, one is that the money's not enough to run the practice, because you've got to have all of this extra stuff, right? So you've got to have IT, you've got to have receptionists, you've got to have a whole lot of nursing and all this other stuff to run the clinic. So it doesn't do it so that you can do a good quality time. Because the other thing with Medicare is it pays a lot more. If I do a consultation and get you out in 10 minutes, I get swags more money than if I do a consultation and it takes 25 minutes.
You sort of feel like cattle. And,
100%. Like, and that's livestock. That thing where people come in, you can only talk about one thing. Like, I don't know if people know about where they sometimes go to doctors and you've got one thing to talk about. And it's just because they've only got 10 minutes. And the trouble with that one thing is that you can't just kind of cut that one thing out of a person and take it away from where they are in their, you know, in the environment in which they live. Or, you know, oh, I'm just going to talk to you about the infection I have in my toe. Well, actually, we need to also talk about your diabetes for that. We need to talk about your footwear. We need to talk about all of this other stuff. And you can't do it properly in 10 minutes. Now, sure, if you wanted to...
That's the holistic approach to health.
100%. Yeah. And if you wanted to come in with an infection on your toe, I could give you antibiotics and that would take me less than 10 minutes and I could make money on it.
You could do it if you really wanted it. If you're a doctor, they just streamline the whole process.
But you're going to just get another infection in your toe if I do that. And maybe that's a good economic model, right? I just keep seeing you every 10 minutes and keep giving you more antibiotics. But... It's not actually about healing people at all.
I grew up with the Aboriginal Health Service back in the early 70s around Fitzroy, and something that we created. And was more than just coming and seeing a doctor. It was more just about coming and talking to people in a large degree, because our people wouldn't go to the health system here because it's so racist. Yep. And we had to create our own. But it was all about the holistic approach to people's health, and started to make some real inroads in that, and that all got incorporated, I suppose, and lost its meaning.
Yeah, similar thing where it's like, you know, what's the bottom line? How do we fund this? Yeah. We need to do, you know, care plans. We need to do all of this sort of stuff. And look, don't get me wrong, care plans are a really great idea and I really like them, but when you're doing them for the person in front of you needing them rather than because that way we can bill it and get $170, you know, like it's about, you know, looking at what are we doing about health and well-being. And that's that thing too. Well-being is about more than just what diagnoses you've got written on your file. Well-being is about having a sense of community, having a relationship to a place, being able to just pop in and know that it's a safe space for you. A lot of the feedback that I'm getting is that people see that co-health building as a safe place, and a place that, say, for example, if you've got people from traumatic backgrounds, if you've got people from refugee backgrounds, they've just lived in a place which isn't safe for, you know, a long, long time. And so to have a place that is supportive and safe goes well beyond thinking about how much you're billing Medicare. Like, that's about real community health, not only just about diagnosing.
Well, it looks like we're taking a real serious blow in our communities.
I
just want to let you know that I've been joined in the studio with my dear friend Gabrielle Dimitri.
Yes. Oh, g'day. How are you?
Hey, Kath. I'm here nodding along with everything you're saying.
Yeah.
It's really the foundation of what's gone wrong here is just that complete lack of recognition of the different model of care that CoHealth and our community health centres provide.
Yeah. That's it exactly. And we need a multiplicity of models. You know, it's not, you know, they're fine. We absolutely, you know, there's a place for that, you know, 6-minute medicine, just quickly get your script. But that place is for people who are otherwise, you know, got good social supports. But when you're talking about the people who come to visit CoHealth on the main, they're people who are complicated and need far more than that.
Absolutely.
Keep us posted, Kath. Tell us again about the rally on Saturday.
Gabrielle, you probably have the better, more knowledge of it. So 2 p.m.
That's right.
Outside Sarah Whitty's office, so that's the corner of Brunswick and Johnson from recollection.
Yep.
And I reckon it's going to be big and it's going to be loud and it's going to be demanding, and I reckon I think there's a lot of community anger about this, and I don't think that they have realised what they've bitten off here.
They're definitely going to feel the pressure. I mean, it's just unavoidable that both levels of government, state and federal, Labor governments, are going to have to come and step up. And it's just about how long are they going to let the community pressure grow? How much stronger do we have to get? How many more voices do we need on board before Labor realises that this is a problem they can't weasel out of?
Yeah, that's right. And they need to, especially, you know, Mark Butler's saying on the 1st of November, right, we're going to do all of these bulk billing incentives so that we can increase the percentage of consultations that are bulk billed. Well, if he lets CoHealth go down, that's 40,000 bulk billed consultations that he's going to miss out on, you know, and not just him, actually. That's 40,000 consultations that people, bulk billed consultations that people are going to miss out on.
It's terrible.
We'll see you at the rally.
Oh, well, no, you won't, because I'm in the Tarawa. At the moment, but the next one. You'll see me at the next one.
Okay.
At the next one.
Well, stay in touch with us, Kath, and we'll keep yarning. And I'm on Mondays and Wednesdays. Be a good time to have a yarn. And maybe
When you come back.
I'm
at CoHealth on Collingwood on a Monday, so that works out well.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Been nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. You take care.
Keep out the fight. All right. Bye.
See you, Kath.
Bye.
Ah, well, geez, closing those services down. What's going on, Gabriel?
CoHealth has been sounding the alarm for years. You know, it was on my radar before I got elected that they were going under, that they couldn't that Medicare didn't cover their model of care, as Kath was saying. It's not six-minute medicine. It's holistic, long appointments to really work through all of the underlying issues that person might come with. It's also the pharmacy, which provides a service that very few other pharmacies provide, particularly for people seeking opioid replacement therapy, where you can go to the front desk, not some back door. You don't have to pay your $7 dispensing fee. It's a non-judgmental space where people from all backgrounds and with all issues can come and have that holistic care. And God, if Labor lets this service go under, this is going to be a disastrous turning point for our community.
It's
combined
not just
there, with
it's
the
in Kensington and where else was it?
Kensington, Fitzroy, and Collingwood. Yeah. So Kensington and Fitzroy, they're going to wind back the GP and counselling services, so they're not going to offer that anymore. Collingwood, what they're saying is that they're going to have to close completely, because not only is the GP and counselling services not funded adequately, but also their building is falling down. They've been there since 1977. They've been asking since 2019. They came with a shovel-ready plan to build a new health centre that would match the needs of our community, plus 50 community homes on top, on the site that they own, for people with complex health needs, so that they are living where they are getting their treatment. It's such a good plan, and it's such a good spot for that. You know, on Hoddle Street, it's within a residential block, so it's, you know, a community that wants more community and public housing in their area, and the government just turned their back on it. It was they had the community's buy-in. Imagine that, for like a 50 unit block where communities normally turn their noses up at high-rise developments, the community was backing it, and the government promised them that they would fund it that year. Wasn't in the budget. Then they were like, don't worry, Minister Wynne and Foley said, don't worry, it's going to be in an election promise. Just hold your breath. Well, they've been holding their breath ever since. And I don't know why at this current stage, where we need more mental health support, we need more general health support, we need more housing, why has Labor turned its back?
It's such a critical service.
So critical.
In these areas. And do you think it's got anything to do with the closing of the towers?
Well, I think it's related in the
long bow there. I mean, is it, or is it? That's the first thing that came to my head.
Me too. I actually think it's kind of consequential and it's connected, but I don't think they're that like well organized and planned about it. I think it's just showing that this government has a complete and utter disregard, disrespect, disconnect from the communities that they're supposed to be serving. They're listening to the big end of town. They're listening to their corporate donors. They're making sure that they've got a nice new swanky corporate stand at the Grand Prix that's cost $350 million, and they are not on the ground. They're not seeing how people are struggling. They're just building new prisons and boasting about the numbers of, you know, unsentenced First Nations women and children they're incarcerating. They're just completely disconnected from what's happening in the real world. And so in that way, I think it is connected, because they don't care if disadvantaged, marginalised people in our communities in the inner city are going to be pushed further to the margins. They don't care if there are more homeless people. They don't care if they push them out. Push them to absolute desperation.
Just build bigger jails.
Just build bigger jails.
That sorts that problem out, as far as I can. Well, it doesn't really make things a hell of a lot worse. And, you know, it's a really sad state of affairs, actually. And how far have we gone? How far have we slipped? I thought health was based on needs and things like that, but apparently not.
And I thought, you know, health, housing, education, that's what most people think the Labor government stands for.
Oh, God.
And they are stripping money from our public schools. They are letting our health centres collapse, and they're demolishing our public housing. They are an absolute shell of what most people think they stand for.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they want more than anything to try to deflect the responsibility for this. And so they're, you know, they are still failing to step in any appropriate way. in Parliament last week, we passed a motion. The crossbench, including the Greens, the opposition, and even the government let it through because they are feeling the pressure. And the motion was for the Labor government to come in with an emergency support package, $4 million to cover the immediate shortfall in their operating, and $25 million minimum to address the Collingwood building. They let it through because they knew that they would not be able to justify voting against it.
Well, but they've been given what will that do, that amount of money? Is that inadequate?
It will meet the immediate issue, but the other part of the motion was to negotiate with the federal government because they're both shirking responsibility for community health because it's in this bit of a grey zone in terms of whose responsibility it is. Negotiate with the federal government to come up with a long-term sustainable solution to be able to fund our community health centres. And they've got till November 30th to come up with the solution to commit the funds, and we'll be watching them. You know, we're rallying on Saturday. We're not letting up. We're letterboxing the entire neighbourhood. You know, this is the biggest campaign that our area has been involved in since we won the East West Toll Road, the fight against the East West Toll Road 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. This is the biggest fight, and we're not going to let them walk away from CoHealth.
Well, how do we get them mobilised?
We just keep pressuring them. We're using every single tool in the toolbox in Parliament. We are not letting them off the hook. We need to turn up in numbers on the street, turn up to letterbox, turn up to, you know, share the petition. The petition is just a starting point. You know, you put your name down, you sign up to a campaign. The next step is you take a bunch of flyers and you letterbox your neighbours. The next step is you turn up at a rally and you tell everyone about it. The next step is you turn up in Parliament. You don't let those people off the hook because they, what we need to do in all of these struggles, whether it's public housing, whether it's First Nations justice, whether it's, you know, our health centres, whether it's our public school funding, Labor sees things in black and white. It's this binary. Either they are working for their donors and their corporate sponsors, or they are working for votes.
Sounds like the Liberal Party to me.
Oh, They're very much like very close to each other, one and the same. I mean, they both accept corporate donations. What can you do when the major parties are stuck in this idea of power, which is so closely related to the corporations that fund them?
Yeah,
that's the fundamental problem with our political system.
Mm.
And so, apart from the fact that it's illegitimate, an illegitimate colonial structure that's been imposed on the sovereign people and sovereign land. So that's probably the more fundamental issue.
Is that the way to approach all this stuff?
What was that?
Is that the way to head to go on all this stuff? Because it's, you know, this is the fundamental questions that need to be resolved as well.
Absolutely.
And long, let's cut to the chase.
It's one long, long line of this kind of...
It's an illegal occupation.
Illegitimate occupation.
It's a failed state. So let's do the right thing.
The whole thing's corrupt.
Let's boot the Crown out of here for a start. A few other measures that we could take immediately and restructure it and make it for the people. You know, that's not what it is. Mm. It's it's just something so they can abuse this country, and that's what they've always done. And it's not going to work.
Mm.
You know, so it's... It's going to fall over sooner or later.
Yeah.
And if we don't take the chances now, or do it now, it'll be a hell of a lot harder and worse when we do. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the corporations are running the show at the moment. It's not even the government.
Yeah. And what are these corporations? Mining companies.
Gambling companies, the major developers. They're running the show. They're the ones giving the parties the money so that they stay in power.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Anthony Pratt, who runs Vizzy, who's a huge, huge, huge supporter of Israel and the Netanyahu government, he's the Labor Party's major sponsor. He's the single largest sponsor.
It's a pretty sick state of affairs, actually. You know, this issue of Israel. How much money does it go to Israel? Do you know anything about... What sort of amounts of money go there?
Because I mean,
the Labor government say that they haven't been supporting the, you know, that's totally untrue.
No, there's a lot of, I don't know the exact figures, but I mean, that actually today there's been an announcement that they have quietly sent an email to defense suppliers saying that they can no longer directly export weapons to Israel, which is at one, in, you know, from one perspective, huge, because the community pressure has been trying to make that happen for a very, very long time, and that is a turning point. But it's also an admission. They denied it for such a long time that they were sending weapons to Israel.
That's right.
And only just now have they drawn the line.
Is that complicity in what's going on over there?
Absolutely. So, the Victorian and the Australian government are complicit in the genocide, without a doubt.
Yeah, I've always claimed that. That's the case. And so what's the extent of the support they do get coming out of it, this country here?
Well, I mean, the Victorian government has hosted the Israeli ambassador within the last, in Parliament, within the last few years. They have, they've stood up in Parliament saying, voting on a motion that starts with, we stand with Israel and uphold its inherent right to self-defence. When we knew there was nothing in what Israel was doing that was self-defense, that it was clearly a genocide from before October 7, clearly a genocide. Yes. And yet this Victorian Labor and Liberal both have stood by that statement that they stand with Israel.
Why? Why was they got such a strong hold over this place, do you think?
I think that it has to do with some very influential voices that members of the Labor Party are very, very close to. That they are too scared or too complicit or too involved with to be able to stand up against them. Mm. I think it's about money. I think it's about power. I think it's about a morally bereft Labor Party.
Makes me think that's a bit of a stronghold here for Zionism and, you know, even Nazis, you know.
Well, I mean, they turn their a blind eye to actual neo-Nazis marching in the street saying racist and xenophobic and anti-Semitic things. And yet when we, you know, every week in Parliament, I make it my business to update the House on how many people Israel has killed, how many schools and hospitals they've bombed, to remind them of their complicity, because Victoria is still connected with the Israeli military, still supplying parts and weapons to Israel. And they call me anti-Semitic for it.
They call me all sorts of
things. I'm sure, yeah. I mean, we're in good company, aren't we?
I've actually got a case against the Australian government.
Yes, you do. In
regards to declaring Hamas as a terrorist organisation. I don't think Australia's in a position to decide on anyone who's a terrorist on this planet.
I mean,
also genocide as well. You know, they're not hardly qualified. And I think it's, you know, by listing Hamas as a terrorist, it justifies this genocide that's going on.
Mm. There's certainly a double standard when it comes to the things that the state of Israel has perpetrated, and the way they seem to be able to just get away with the most horrific things that this current world has, you know, could ever imagine, and with no condemnation, you know, no condemnation whatsoever from our politicians.
I just can't believe it myself. Who would have imagined it could come to this?
Mm.
It has, and it's been brought there for a long time. But, just total disregard for humanity. And
absolutely.
Australia, good on you, Australia. You're not bad, you know. Anyway, your day will come. What were you going to come in for today?
Public housing, I think we were going to speak about, weren't we? I mean, it's all connected, isn't it? The government's in the pockets of those, corporations and developers, and this is definitely one of those situations where they've been listening to the big developers, the property council, who have their greedy little hands, their greedy little eyes all over this valuable public land in Richmond, in Fitzroy, in
Collingwood. What is public land, anyway? Define that for us.
Well, I mean, in this current structure, it's land that is...
Does the public own it or who owns it?
Yeah, the public owns it. I mean, it's all of our... I mean, it's at...
The government manages it, though. They decide whether they can sell it or not.
The government... Well, they're not technically selling it, but they are actually selling a lot of public land. They're just selling it off. And they're also celebrating the fact that they are requesting the developers who buy it to include 10% so-called affordable housing, which, as we know, the only kind of parameter is that it's no more than market rate, which is not affordable for anyone. So they are selling off public land, but these particular public housing estates, what they're doing is this thing called the ground lease model, which they announced as this big shiny new thing because they came under so much fire for selling off public housing land. So then they're like, no, look, we're not going to sell it. It's going to be a long-term lease. So peppercorn rent that the developer pays $1 a year to be able to build all these private apartments and a handful of community homes, which is privately operated social housing, more expensive than public housing, less secure.
How do you get these peppercorn rents?
Well, you have to... Yeah, I don't know. You have to go through the back door, I think. You have to have multiple meetings with the Premier. You have to have a lot to offer in terms of election funding.
You pay for bags full of cash.
They're paying for it in other ways.
Yeah.
And basically for 40 years they get to reap the benefits of this land, make a huge amount of profit. It's a very, very obscure funding arrangement. It's this black box of accountability where you've got financiers, developers, builders and a community housing organisation, which gives the whole consortium a not-for-profit status, which means they get land tax exemptions and they get income tax exemptions. They're basically funneling all this money. They're lending money to themselves at really high interest rates that the taxpayer has to pay. And they're also getting quarterly service payments and annual service payments through the government for the next 50 years, which have no upper limit. There's no restriction on how much those rates can go up. And so they are fleecing us long term for a development that they're going to give back to us in 40 years in a complete state, because there's going to be no incentive for them to maintain those buildings. The people who are going to be living in the community housing part of it are going to be way worse off than the people living in our public housing these days, who are at least living in structurally sound apartments that are well proportioned.
You're talking about the towers.
I'm talking about the towers, the apartments themselves. Right, so tell us about your apartment.
I love it there. I used to love my community, but that's all changed. Like, all the maintenance has fallen away. It's just, you know, just making it impossible. I'm still hanging in there, but I think there's nothing wrong with these towers.
Got sunlight?
Beautiful sunlight. I see the sunrise every morning. Comes through my window. I can basically sunbake inside my... So I really love it.
Yeah.
And they're very solidly built.
Yeah.
And it was great up until a couple of years ago until they announced this.
Yeah.
And...
Well, that's what we've heard from everyone is this state of managed decline, especially since they made the announcement. They've just basically very deliberately stepped away from maintenance and repairs.
Yes.
And... the impact that it has on residents, we've seen it and you've probably felt it. The ability to feel good in your skin, good in your community, good in your home, to have a sense of well-being really declines if the person managing that property has no respect for it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happened too. And it's really sad because a lot of good people have had to move away. I don't know what's happened to them. Families. You couldn't have a family in those places at the moment. Just the way they are. It's really sad.
And that's a product of over so many years failing to build public housing to the point where, you know, they are reserved for, you know, I guess the number of people in there that have complex needs is so much higher than if we had enough public housing that everyone could be in a community and you could have families living alongside individuals living alongside, you know, and a community that supports each other rather than having this kind of like really, really small number of properties that people can live in, so that, you know, it becomes hard to live there.
Well, let's do something about it. I'll see you there on the corner of Brunswick and Johnson at 2 o'clock on Saturday.
Co-health. That's on Co-health.
Oh, that's Co-health.
But, I'm sure, we're fighting for public housing as well, because also these Fitzroy and Collingwood and even Kensington, they're really, high-density public housing communities, and the people who live in those towers rely on Co-health.
Yeah, they're going to miss them the most.
Absolutely. So we're fighting for both things at the same time.
Okay. All right, Gabriel. Thanks heaps for coming in.
Thanks, Robbie. Great to chat with you.
See you again soon, eh?
See ya.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. To listen to a full audio of Bunjil's Fire radio show, a historically informed critical analysis of Aboriginal affairs and the ongoing political movement for land rights, treaty, sovereignty and the cessation of genocide, go to 3cr.org.au/Bunjil's Fire. If you want to support independent black media on 3CR, please go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.